Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
When you grow up, live like a good boy ought to. And your mama takes a shine to put their son. Some different, all the girls that seem to like you. Cause you're handsome, like you talk.
Races. We're at Belmont Park. Just talked to Haskin in Kentucky, and now we'll go to Hong Kong. And Pat Cummings, we looked forward to the weekend and the interesting matchup as the Group 1 season, the portion of the season, came to a close and didn't disappoint. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. No, it did not. We had 12 Group 1s here in Hong Kong, and this traditionally draws the smallest field because we tend not to have the stamina in the horse population here. It's a sprinter-miler-focused jurisdiction, but end of the season, 2,400 meters, kind of the standard wrap-up for the year at Group 1 level, and only a field of five, but interestingly, of the total 12 Group 1s had in Hong Kong this season, average field size was just over 10 horses a race, which was really, really solid. And but look, you know, it all came down to would we see another rousing performance from Pakistan Star, or would he just do what he's done before? You just don't know, and that's the thing. And I think I've seen even the shrewdest of the commentators out there, Nick Luck, said the thing about Pakistan Star that makes him so fun to watch is you just don't know what you're going to see. Is he going to stop? Is he going to demolish the field? Is he going to be quirky? Is he going to pull himself up and keep going? You just don't know. And what we saw was his brilliance again. They ran a fairly slow opening quarter, but then the pace was fairly standard throughout after the first run through the straight, and he just tracked front-running Exultant and just never looked back. He won by a length and three quarters, picking up his second consecutive Group 1 win, and now he moves into the Hong Kong Horse of the Year race. And it's probably a three-horse race between the three-time Group 1 winning Beauty Generation, two-time Group 1 winner Time Warp, and Pakistan Star. And as you know, we've kind of been bandying about, all three horses have the tangibles, but all of the intangibles belong to Pakistan Star. Such a troubled season at the end of last year when he did stop in the middle of a race as the 1-5 favorite. He stopped in a barrier trial in the summer that he really needed to pass in order to get back to the races, and then was put through a four-barrier trial test to get him back to this point. And he did it, and he's now won more than $35 million Hong Kong dollars. It's over $4.5 million U.S. We've actually done the research, Steve. He's the highest-earning German bred in history now, surpassing Daydream, the filly that won the ARC several years back, maybe 2009, I believe it was. And No, I'm sorry, not 2009, 2011. Daydream won the ARC, and she won the King George a year later. So the highest-earning German bred of all time, and he's just a five-year-old gelding, and he's only going to improve, we think, as time goes by. So plenty more to hear from Pakistan Star. Tony Cruz ran 1-2-3 in the race. And it was just a very satisfying way to end the Group 1 season in Hong Kong, although there's still 11 meetings left in the campaign, and plenty more action to come.
Well, and the Pakistan Star portion, it does feel like the last couple of opportunities to watch and bet and take him in, that he's been better, that he's been about the business. And I suppose it'll take him, you know, acting funny again to reorient the discussion. But it kind of feels like maybe there was something – there was a root cause that is now behind him, perhaps.
Well, there was a very good video that was tweeted from a Jockey Club account a couple, probably last week, last Friday. And it sat down with Mark Richards and Ed Sadler, and Ed talked to Mark about kind of the legacy, you know, where this all started from, and how he was a quirky horse growing up on the farm in Germany. They saw him at the ARC sale, talked to the German farm that had brought him there, and just all the quirks from the very beginning. And there's some great footage in there that shows Pakistan Star in his breeze-ups when he came here to Hong Kong, because we have a breeze-up in advance of our sale, and he was just refusing then. And the quirks have popped up along the way. But the last two efforts are undeniable. He's the best horse in Hong Kong right now. He is certainly the most popular horse in Hong Kong. And on the international ratings, he's at least about a 1-2-1, which will put him in the top 20 in the world at this point. So he's incredibly fun. His owner, Kerm Din, was essentially embarrassed for his horse's antics previously, but he's really come around and is very well deserving of the performances. And you know, it almost just kind of feels like it was worth the wait, because it makes you appreciate him that much more, the success that he has had. And I think he's on the road to being named the Horse of the Year here in Hong Kong, which would be a phenomenal accomplishment.
Well, another note that I saw from you that, got to mention the All Dirt, you know, one of the four opportunities, all main track racing. And if we go back a couple of years ago to the first conversations we had introducing Hong Kong racing to people, and your comments, and then Paul Matisse, you know, talking about the normally savvy betting public missing and misinterpreting dirt racing when these opportunities arise, and those that weren't paying attention yesterday, you had one of those rare opportunities and a $30 winner that should have jumped off the page at people.
Without question, Steve. I think there were two of them even, and not redboarding too thick here, but I was fortunate enough to tie them up together. But Cloud Nine, race two. This was the last of the this year. We had five of these meetings. Most of the Australians that are here just can't stand them. I absolutely love them, as we've discussed. But there's only one horse in Hong Kong by Tappet, and that's this horse, Cloud Nine, for training Tony Millard. He was bred in America. He's out of a Galileo mare named Dress Rehearsal. And prior to last night, he had only been on the dirt here twice. They both came at the end of his seasons and at times when he really wasn't going all that well. Well, he's been going much better this season and recently been going well. And he was getting the apprentice Jack Wong aboard, going a mile and an eighth. And it just felt like, you know, things were right. And you just can't ignore an informed son of Tappet getting on the dirt in Hong Kong, where you're not necessarily going to run against a bunch of horses that are also bred for it, but they're out there. And he was a nice 14-1 winner. And then later on the card, race five was a race I thought was really wide open. You had a horse who was favored in Master Bernini, who is a son of Bernardini. But I had my eyes on the New Zealand-bred son of Canny Lad, who was out of a Fusaichi Pegasus mare named Tropicana, and another 14-1 winner. So the value is there. You're not going to find too many dirt races out of the 800 or so races a year in Hong Kong. You're only going to get about 80 to 90 of those races on the dirt, and a whole bunch of them come in quick segments throughout the season at Sha Tin, with the occasional midweek meeting under the lights at Sha Tin on the dirt. And it's always well worth looking for those opportunities.
Well, how much can we look ahead? What do we have coming up?
There was a hard spun winner the other day too. But he was a favorite, and you know, me and favorites, we don't get it. Coming up this weekend, it is the Lion Rock Trophy, Group 3, goes as Race 7. We have a 10-race card. It'll start a little earlier than normal, 12:45 a.m. Eastern Time, 9:45 p.m. Pacific on Saturday. We're starting early because we'll be simulcasting the Yasuda Kinen from Japan in the middle of our card. Western Express, the horse that ran second in the Hong Kong Mile and the Champions Mile, he'll be in there in Japan. But we get the return of Werther, former horse of the year here in Hong Kong. He bled in the Hong Kong Gold Cup and has been out 3 months mandatory. He'll be coming back in. They've taken the blinkers off of him. This is over only a mile. He's been successful at this trip before, but I think trainer John Moore is looking ahead. The plan is if everything comes out of this well, he'll go to Japan for the Group 1 Takarazuka Kinen over a mile and 3/8 because he really hasn't had too much racing. So that's the plan. I think there's all the reason to play against him and to look in another direction. Seven of the 10 horses in this race will carry between 113 and 116 pounds, and there are options to pursue, among them Prawn Baba, who is really in some very good form at the moment. And, of course, the horse we've gone back to the well time and time again this year, Steve, the Golden Age. But he will get the services of Joe Morera going from the front end for trainer Tony Cruz, carrying just 113. I give him a nice chance in here. So that's race seven, the Group 3 Lion Rock Trophy on Sunday at Sha Tin.
Very nice. Very nice. And, of course, we mentioned when we talked last week that things could start to see the finish line for the season.
See the finish line for the season in more than one way. I mean, there's more than one finish line here, Steve. With the finish line, speaking specifically of the Hong Kong racing season, yes. We are just 11 meetings are remaining, so it's pretty much every week, twice a week, up until mid-July. July 15th will be the last day of the season. There is no midweek racing during Royal Ascot Week, so there will be no midweek racing then. And the first week of July, there's also no midweek racing due to the there's a holiday here on July 1st, so there's a Monday meeting that is on the cards. Actually, I lie. I'm saying that. I thought there was a Monday. Oh, it's a Sunday meeting. It's July 1st, and there is a midweek race meeting that week, so just ignore all that. But my mind is starting to wander, Steve, because I'll come to the end of my three-year contract with the club here next week, and we'll wrap up what's been an incredibly enjoyable run here in Hong Kong for the last 3 years. I left the U.S. The day after American Pharoahs at Belmont, and I will be returning not much longer than 3 years after that. So it's been a really good run, lots of fun, lots of friends, tremendous experience to be a part of this year and see it and live it and just be here in the environment for as long as I have. And I'm looking forward to getting back stateside and starting on a new project.
And appreciate you letting everybody know this as well, Pat. And you always had a penchant and an interest on the international side, and of course DubaiRaceNight.com, and you know, really helped, I think, galvanize interest in the carnival for people in particularly, you know, North America. And this foray to Australasia, are you in position to talk about what you're going to be doing when you come home?
In a couple weeks. Not ready just yet, but okay. Be happy to share more, and then there will be news about it. So it's coming down the pike. Look, I had an opportunity to remain here in Hong Kong, and a generous one at that. But, you know, the way the world works, and particularly in this part of the world, in this part of the industry, everything's very contract-based. And when I was coming up on the end of the contract and, you know, faced with an interesting opportunity to return home, kind of the way I felt about it is that if the same opportunity that I've been presented with was presented to me 3 years from now, I'd be happy to take it. So it's just come a little sooner than I maybe would have thought, but I'm very excited and can talk about it more in just a little bit. And look, leaving things here in very good hands, the team that is assembled has been the guys who are, really, to be fair, on the front lines, David Morgan and Andrew Hawkins, who have led our content for, you know, basically the entire time that I've been here. And they've just been, they're tremendous resources and class acts. And David has been here for 6.5 years, and Andrew's been in Hong Kong for about 5 of those. And they just know Hong Kong racing so well. And you know, it's been a fantastic time, and learned lots, and loved just about every second of it. So it's been plenty of fun, and but ready to get home and tackle some American racing from a different angle, and it should be good fun.
Well, can't thank you enough, of course, and we'll talk more, and we'll continue conversations with Andrew Hawkins down the road. But this has been, you know, really a tremendous help to people, leading them to, you know, look outside the lines and outside the borders and you know, gain a wider appreciation and understanding of racing, and really the same kind of exercise that we conducted, you know, doing the Dubai visits for that period as well. And there is no question, Pat, and I'm not looking, you know, you and I aren't looking to take credit for it, but it really is apparent to me, because I, you know, I'm on the air talking about, you know, all kinds of racing, you know, 50 weeks a year, how much more in tune with the international racing landscape the North American player and fan is. And Dubai was a big part of that, and then the Royal Ascot, and to some extent Cheltenham and some of the other festivals, and now Australasia, Melbourne Cup and Hong Kong. And it should be obvious to anybody paying attention how much more plugged in to the game American and Canadian players and fans are than they were 10, 15 years ago.
Well, there's a gross globalization of the game to the point, I would suggest, Steve, that it is one of the great global successes of racing to have been able to do this. It hasn't always happened through commingled pools, but that is growing, and it's starting to be more and more over time, and I think we'll see that continue to evolve. But what is happening is Australians are realizing that their bottom lines can be benefited if Americans are betting into their pools late in the evening in America. And Hong Kong realized that it would be beneficial that, you know, in the Hong Kong market, there's only so much growth here that you have to look elsewhere. And the English are finally starting to realize that a strong tote is of absolute necessity for a strong industry, and that they have been brought down the road of the bookmakers for far too long, and that that's probably not the best thing to subsidize the running of races. And there was a fantastic article from Emma Berry in TDN talking to the group that is trying to change the tote in the UK, and it focused very clearly on takeout and said, our goal is to drop takeout 25%, which means an actual takeout of about 14.25% for all tote bets in the UK. That, you know, imagine a decade or 15 years ago, a discussion about takeout in the United Kingdom resonating anywhere in America. It wouldn't. The concept isn't considered, but suddenly you see the UK come out and say, we think we need to drop takeout, and our goal is to drop a 25% to go from 19 to 14 and change. That's going to get people to perk up their ears and say, interesting, how about that? The customer options are greater than they've ever been before. Access to information is the same, and the dialogue is truly universal. And I think, you know, to a great degree, Twitter has had a fantastic role in that internationalization. And as someone who's talked to you about almost exclusively overseas racing for the better part of the last decade, it's been fun to see it happen, and it's only going to continue. It will only get stronger over time, and I look forward to it. I'm going to be in South Africa in a couple of weeks. I'm going to Mauritius, the little island nation with a French Creole background. I'll be going there for a week, and I'll get to experience racing in Mauritius. And then I'm off to South Africa for the running of the Durban July, and then the first week of July before I make it back to the U.S. So looking forward to those experiences. And the racing in Mauritius is, believe it or not, Steve, the oldest racing in the Southern Hemisphere.
That's cool.
It dates to the 1830s, and I'm looking forward to getting there and experiencing that. So it is a world unlike any other that we know from a racing standpoint, and it's only going to get bigger. And if we were talking about the Epsom Derby, there's a fantastic chance that an American bred can win the Epsom Derby. Son of Kitten's Joy, Roaring Lion, do not ignore him. He's about 10-1. He's by Kitten's Joy out of a Street Sense mare. I think he's got a fantastic chance in the Derby on Saturday.
Well, Pat, I appreciate, as always, the contributions and the insightful lead on the topic, and we'll talk ahead of Belmont. And you know, I suppose if Justify wins and takes the Triple Crown, bookending your 3 years away, I'm wondering if there's some correlation. You were here though. I think for Pharaoh, yes,
I was there.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It was my last day. I was with Mubdahidj, of course, hoping for the upset. Not really.
Well, look to his. He needs your help now.
Yeah. I had a feeling that Baffert's horse in the Gold Cup was going to be good if they were sending him off the Lone Star.
Well, Baffert's horse ran great, the Dr. Dorr in the Gold Cup. But
yeah,
it's funny. The one horse that I talked to him about Tuesday that came up, and he brought him up on his own. I wasn't gonna bring Mubtahij up, but he brought him up and said how disappointed he was with that performance at Lone Star. So they'll regroup.
Yeah. No, without question. Looking forward to getting back. I'll be back in the States mid-July, but I will be up at Saratoga that first week of August, and really looking forward to it and getting back stateside.
Outstanding. Pat, I appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Pat Cummings, HK, for a little bit longer, and then he's going to have to adjust his Twitter handle again. From Shake Pat, right? And then of course we had the fun moniker for him, the Cumming Dynasty. So we'll see what he's up to when he has the occasion to tell us and fill us in with what his plan is coming back to the U.S. Pat Cummings, everybody. Hong Kong Jockey Club, HKJC on Twitter as well. Let's take a break and we'll come back. Tony Black, I want to reach out to Tony and get a few minutes in with him. And then Cherie DeVoe is going to swing through and sit with me face to face. We'll ask Cherie the really tough questions. Not really. Although, I don't know. If you have any questions you want me to ask Cherie, I can send them along. No, we'll talk about her really amazing success and starting out and, growing into the role that now finds her sending out horses in her name. Rich Eng later as well. Tony Black next, though. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing.
Stats Race Lens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You say you stand by your man. Tell me something I don't understand. You said you love me, that's a fact. And then you left me, said you felt trapped. Well, some things you can't explain away. But the heartaches in me till this day. And stand by me.
We're back at the races, and getting some very good suggestions for questions to for Sheree, and happy to turn to welcome Tony Black. And Tony spent the morning, that, you know, now that the cold weather is gone, and at least the rainy weather on hold maybe until the weekend, but maybe it's become the Tony Black's a little bit of a fair weather kind of a exercise rider these days. Good morning, Tony.
Just a fair weather friend. Just a fair weather exercise rider. All right. Now, you know, when I listened to that, to your version of Stand By Me, and I forgot to tell you this, but I just happened to be flipping the channels the other morning, and they were showing the royal wedding, right?
Yeah.
I don't know anything wrong, but do you know they played a rhythm and blues version of Stand By Me that I never heard before when they were showing
absolutely.
The royal wedding? And it makes me feel like there's a little royalty in me.
That's you. We're going to start calling you Prince Tony.
Prince Tony. That's good. That's a good one. Because I've been called just about everything in the horse racing business. And I can always remember walking back years ago over the years when there would be thousands of 10,000 people there. And it was trying at times to get back to the jocks room and ignoring the comments made on the outside fence. And some kids couldn't take it, but I just let it go in one ear and out the other. And you know what? I longed for those days and that abuse to happen again, where there's thousands of people and there's hundreds of them along the outside fence and they're abusing you all the way back. They were good days.
In New York, there's certain spots that are pretty legion and famous, and of course at Aqueduct in particular, and the Rastas, all the Rastas, and they used to give it to Jose Santos. Santos, you stink.
And Jose. You know what? It's really something that when you walk back at Saratoga and you're right in the midst of the crowd, and for a kid to see that for the first time, especially when the first time I ever went up there. And I'm thinking, man, you'd never walk back in the midst of the crowd at Keystone.
Well, exactly. There'd be people hitting you with batteries.
Yeah. The Philadelphia fans were a little different than if you walk back in the crowd than the New York fans. It was a total different scenario. But Racing's still a lot of fun. And you know what, Steve? I might even ride one on Tuesday.
Unbelievable.
I won on the Bluegrass Express. I won on him in December. And the man told me this morning, he says, get on him tomorrow, tell me what you think. I'm going to enter him for Tuesday, and I hope you want to ride him. I said, well, I still need that one more winner for the 5210. I'm at 5209. So maybe we'll get lucky if the race goes for Tuesday.
Unbelievable. There's no stopping you. And, you know, I was with Luzzy here a couple of minutes ago this morning and was talking to Mike. And it's funny because when I was in Baltimore and I went through I got all those pictures that I put up when I'm at Pimlico the week. And I found a picture of Luz when he rode down there and when he was young, and God, he looks just like his son Lane, looks just like him. And he's coming back, you know, from an injury that would have retired most riders. Joe Bravo was here earlier too, Tony, and you know Joe well. Here's a guy that if he had not had injuries kind of interrupt his career, at this point he would be absolutely among the elite riders, on the back half of his career. I don't think people realize, how good a rider Joe Bravo's been for as long as he has. The same thing with Luz, and it's a testimony to everybody that, as we root for Marlon St. Julian after this this injury that he's trying to recover from, it just reminds you, how tough and resilient that you guys are and the gals are as a breed. I will also mention, since we're talking region, they started yesterday at Delaware. I had Rich Glazier on, and I paid I've tried to single out Carol Cedeno, who you've ridden against for years. She's had a tremendous career, and I don't think people realize she's had children and, comes back and has won riding titles at Delaware, approaching 700 career wins. There's not just men, that are setting high standards.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's men and women in this game, and it's amazing how resilient they are. It's a game where it's not just always easy to win, and you're always striving and working hard in the morning to get on better horses so you can perform on better horses in the afternoon. And then you're always faced with the situation that there'll be an afternoon where you might succumb to some injury. Even in the morning, you might succumb to some injury.
Sure.
And most of the time, these riders that are really loving what they do, the injuries, they don't look at it as something like, oh, boy, I hope this doesn't happen again. They look at it like this. How long is this going to take to get over? You go to the doctor and he says, this is something you have to take time to heal up and blah, blah, blah. And you think to yourself, whatever he says, we can cut it shorter. If he says 3 months, we'll be back in two. If he says 8 weeks, we'll probably be back in four. And people really don't understand the mentality of these riders. In fact, I was with some of my old school buddies going up the road yesterday, and they were talking about what I did for a living. And they said, well, how did you feel after you got hurt and had to get back on horses again? I said, it wasn't after I got hurt I had to get back on horses. It was when I got hurt. How long is it going to take to get over this thing so I can get back on horses? And the guys looked at me. They said, that's kind of a crazy mentality. Nobody wants to go bang their head against the wall and say, geez, when's the next time I can bang my head against the wall? That's the mentality of jocks. And what really helps to feed that mentality is galloping out when you win a race and you stand up at the wire, you get up at the wire and you're galloping out. That is a feeling that you can't duplicate with anything else, I don't think, in your life. And maybe you can, people say, oh, yeah, but you're firstborn or the birth of your children. Yeah, it's all exciting. But there's an excitement about winning races. Yeah, it's all exciting. I've watched all my kids be born. I'm going to be honest. I've watched them all be born. I cut the cord on a couple of them. And it's great. It's a tremendous feeling. And, boy, you can get that tremendous feeling 2-3 times a week or a day or a month, galloping out after you just rode a horse that won. That's a tremendous feeling, too. And you never get over that. And I guess if you do get over it and it isn't exciting to win races, that's when you're really supposed to say, I've had enough, I'm done. But winning races, and for most riders, you're not calculating as you're galloping out, oh boy, this is a $50,000 pot, that's $3,000 to me for the win. I never thought about that. If it was a $4,000 race with a with a $3,000, $4,000 claimer with a $3,000 pot, 180 to the winner, winning jock, or if it was a $30,000 pot, 1,800 to the winning jock, made no difference. It's the same feeling, you know? Come payday, it might have made a difference, but not the feeling of galloping out after winning. It's a tremendous excitement.
Well, that's one of the lures and one of those, I suppose, this translates, Tony, into any, not just sports endeavor, frankly. I would say that, you know, salesmen even, when you,
absolutely,
right, when you close a deal, when you sell a house, when you, you know, we think of it on a different stage, but there's those same quiet moments of satisfaction that can be enjoyed. I mean, completing whatever job, you know, you do, but for you guys in particular, it's so unique, and it's such a narrow fraternity of people, and that's true in most professional athletic endeavors, but especially considering the way you guys have kept in shape and, you know, the success of guys like Smith and Stevens and you and Perry Utz and, you know, even guys that retired in recent memory, Early Fires was riding into his late 50s. It says a lot, Calvin Burrell now and riding selectively, but I can understand why it's in your blood, and there's no easy way to replace that in people's lives.
Right. You know, there's a mental satisfaction in winning in any aspect of any business. But the thing that's unique about being a jockey, there's the mental aspect, the thrill, the mental aspect of winning, tied up with the physical fitness and the physical aspect of it. I mean, it's really a unique profession where you're going out there, you're riding against, you know, the guys that you fraternize with on a daily basis on the racetrack and the jock room. You're riding against them. At times, you really you get used by each other out on the racetrack. You know, you're running somebody up into a switch, or, you know, you put them where they don't want to be, and you're where they want to be, you know, and you abuse them. And here, it's a thrill doing that, you know, and you win the race. I mean, there's a mental aspect to winning that race where you really thought and you did things right according to the way they felt out there. And then you were physically tuned in where you were utilizing your strength and your ability, you know, efficiently and effectively during the running of the race and controlling your horse and can maybe, you know, and in a good scenario, you weren't getting controlled. You were controlling someone around you, you know, and using them. And you win the race, it's a thrill. Then you go back to the jocks room, and you're set in a setting where you have to be fraternized and be together, or ignore each other in a respectful way. You know, whatever comes easiest. And you know, like I told my friends the other day when we were driving down the road, I said, you know, I always say this, you wouldn't put the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles in the same locker room, would you? I said, but you know what? You got to give jocks a lot of credit, not just because I was one for all these years. I was one. But, you know, there's a lot of control displayed by riders. You know, they're out there using each other, abusing each other at times, and not doing it to the point where you're trying to be dangerous or hurtful to one another, but, like I said, using the other jock. And you have to go back to the jock's room and display respect towards each other. And, you know, it is a really unique setting, and it takes a lot of physical and mental strength to survive in that world, in the jock's room, in the locker room, in the rec room. You know, I can remember when kids walk, you mentioned names, you know, I can remember when Mike Luzzi started riding, you know, and his brother John, and you looked at these guys and you said, boy, they're really dedicated and wannabe jockeys. And I can remember when little Joe Pavo walked in the jock's room. If he was 16, I'd be amazed. You know, we all thought he was about 14, 15 years old, and probably was, you know, but nobody looked into it too in depth. But he was a young kid, walked into the jocks room, and he thought, look at this little kid, he's going to be jockey, you know, and he couldn't have weighed 95 pounds. And then you watch him mature and come in that jocks room and turn into one of the competitors, and you see him grow from a little kid into a little kid that you looked at and you almost mocked at times, to one of the really talented individuals. You know, a guy that really handled himself well on the track and off the track. And then as an example of that at Parks, you know, I can remember Frankie Pennington walking into the jocks room and starting to ride, and we used to break his chops on a daily basis, because if we get after him after we abuse him, you know, in the jocks room, not on the track, but just in the jocks room, I'll never forget, he used to come back, and he'd put his head in his hands, and he'd sit in his corner all by himself. And then we watched him mature. I said, hey, Frankie, you know, the more you sit there and sulk and the more you respond to our breaking your chops that way, the worse it gets, brother. I said, you know, and that's the mentality of the jocks. So it's almost like they test you up there as a person as much as they test you out on the racetrack as a horseman and an athlete. It's a unique setting. But you know what? I wouldn't have traded one moment in it for any other profession in the world.
Tony, before we go, I got to ask you one question on this topic. Who was, over the years, in all the jocks rooms, who's the toughest guy that nobody, you know, because you guys police yourselves. If things went on the racetrack, and, you know, the stewards have to, you know, handle a lot of it, but there's plenty that you guys handle on your own. Who would nobody ever mess with?
I'm going to tell you what, man, here's a name from the past, and there's been several, you know, but there's a name from the past, and he was one of the fittest, one of the very talented rider, but also a fit athlete and a talented boxer. And I'll name him, and maybe the name won't even ring a bell. Paul Kaline. He was the Jersey rider. And, you know, he rode, and he was this Hungarian, built solid as a rock. I mean, what an athlete to look at him, physically fit, and could box, and did a little boxing on the side. But nobody ever came back and gave him a whole lot of trouble. And I could tell you some stories about him. But he was a good example of a jock that you wanted to copy, to be physically fit like him. I mean, he looked like a junior weightlifter, a little weightlifter, you know, and nobody really messed with him. But there's been several riders that, you know, have been real tough competitors, but clean competitors. Compete in a fair spirit of competition, but if you got in their face, they could handle themselves too.
Well, then I got to ask the follow-up, and by the way, Rich Migliori is giving you the stamp of approval, mentioning Paul Kaline and how tough he was, and he says one of the toughest. But who, since you bring it up, who was the dirtiest? And you can't say Angel, because we already know Angel is in a class by himself.
yeah, nobody will ever forget Kodak, right? Is that the do a little bit of attention to him.
But, yes.
Geez, I'm trying to think. Who was just
Who used to annoy you out there the most?
Man, I guarantee if you're thinking of somebody and it'll come out, but, oh, yeah, are you kidding me? I'm trying to think.
I got to suggest. Migliori's got a suggestion.
Annoying. There was some of them. Well, I'm at a blank right now.
All right. Well, you know why? You know why you're in a blank? Because Migliori says that you were the... it was you.
But that, you know, that's such a compliment. I take that as such a compliment. Especially
it figures.
Compliment, because it's coming from such an accomplished rider. You know, a guy that's done it all, Mick. You know, he's done it all, and I take that as quite a compliment, even if it's not meant to be.
That's how he. No, he says it is. Yeah, he says he meant that. Tony, work on the Belmont field for next week, and we'll talk next Thursday, and we'll get some final thoughts. You've always had a good feel, and we'll talk about how to negotiate this track and you know, what goes wrong and those kinds of storylines, but this was tremendous. Thank you.
You take care, and thanks. Keep up the good work, Steve. And give Mick a hug for me when you see him next time.
Absolutely. He'll be here this week, and looking forward to seeing him and getting him on here.
You know, he does a good job, too.
Absolutely. XBTV and the great work that they're doing. Tony?
I'm proud of him.
I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Tony Black, everybody. Let's take a break. Cherie DeVoe sitting across from me, and we will talk about her career, which took a exciting turn in the last couple of weeks as she starts to send out horses in her name after working under the tutelage of Chuck Simon and Chad Brown and her own standardbred background growing up in the Saratoga area. Back after this, Hour 3 at the Races, live from Belmont, Cherie DeVoe next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Saturday, June 9th at Belmont Park, Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner Justify will be favored to become the 13th Triple Crown winner in history. Where should your money go? The 150th Belmont Stakes promises to be a historic event, producing possibly potent exotic payoffs. That's why now, more than ever, you need ExpressBet's free Belmont Wager Guide. It's available at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, June 1st, and includes expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Plus, you'll get important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Check back Belmont Week for daily updates, Johnny D's insightful horse-by-horse analysis, and a revised guide, including Eddie O's picks available Friday, June 8th. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Belmont Wager Guide to open a new account, including up to a $500 bonus, and to check out special Belmont Stakes offers and promotions.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.